We have a good audience again this evening, and for your presence, we're appreciative. This evening, I'd like to present a lesson that is one that I consider to be a practical one for daily living. It's one that I've been preaching to myself for a long time, and I haven't fully captured it all in my own living, but I think it's something that we all need to work toward. That is overcoming discontentment in our lives. I've traveled within the three-state area to a lot of churches, many of them smaller, over the last 15 or 20 years. Met a lot of Christians in a lot of different places, and one of the things that I see that's characteristic of an awful lot of us is that we don't seem terribly happy or content with our lives. And that really doesn't include just Christians. I see an awful lot of people that I come in contact with every day at work that are the same way, who don't really seem content or happy with their lives. And this seems sad to me that we could live throughout our lives and not be able to find any contentment in the way in which we're living. This morning, I appealed to those of you that are in the audience who are not Christians to give some particular thought to why you aren't a Christian. Don't let me be in the way. Don't let any preacher be in the way of you obeying the gospel if you want to and you know you need to. Do it tonight. I'd like to begin tonight's lesson by reading the 23rd Psalm, one that you're well acquainted with. It says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." We use that passage a lot of times, even at a funeral service, to try to console people. The thing that is spectacular about that particular psalm is the good feeling that it gives us about this life. No matter what happens, the psalm tells us, you are there, you are helping. Even if I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, even if I face death, I have no reason to fear because you, Lord, are with me. It's a comforting thought. It's just a blissful thought to think about a life that can engage in any type of problem, face any kind of problem, and still be tranquil and happy. But you know, that idyllic contentment that seems in the psalmist's words to be there for him isn't really the situation that a lot of us encounter. We have a lot of days in our lives where we have a far different view of life, and we're sort of down and depressed, and we're really not satisfied with the way that we're living. Nothing really seems to be going the direction that we want it to go. And I'm not standing up here tonight and suggesting to you that even the best Christian living the life that the Bible outlines to its fullest can escape some down days in his or her life. When we lose a loved one or some other catastrophe faces us, like many of the people that are talked about in the Bible, they had their sad days. Jesus wept when Lazarus died. He had his sad days. But when we look at our lives overall and we simply are not content with our lives and our work doesn't satisfy and our way of living doesn't satisfy and the things that we have and gain and do, none of that seems to make us content. It sort of signals to us, does it not, that something isn't quite right? What makes the difference between a person being content and not being content? That's sort of the object that I'm trying to drive at in this lesson. We look at contentment from a biblical standpoint, and we find that contentment, according to the Bible, is not necessarily apathy or a I don't care attitude. Romans 12 and verse 15 tells us that as Christians, we are to rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep. We're not to be apathetic. You know, there was a time in my life, in my late teens and early 20s when I was in college, that I thought the approach to contentment was just to sort of obliterate thought about anything that was wrong. And I guess I was a little bit like some of the Greek philosophers. I thought, well, if I just don't let any of this bother me, if I don't let any of this touch my emotions, then I can be content because the negative of the world won't bother me and I won't let myself get too emotionally high about the good things and I'll just sort of live a tranquil, happy life. Now, you live a boring life too, but that isn't really the approach, being apathetic. Not being concerned about whether people go to heaven or not. That's one way that you don't get down sometimes. If you just say, I don't care whether people spend eternity in hell or not, well, then you don't get so upset when they don't obey the gospel. But you don't get excited either when they do. That's not really what contentment is all about. Anyone can be apathetic or just uncaring. I don't think contentment either is simply self-satisfaction. You know, you read in Revelations, the third chapter, and about verses 15 through 17, about the church at Laodicea, and they thought they were something, they thought they were mighty, and yet the Lord said that they were just lukewarm. They were not really what they thought they were. And contentment, at least in the biblical way of looking at it, is not just being satisfied with the way I am, no matter what that is. Some people who are quite wrong in their behavior can be satisfied or self-content with it. But in the positive, contentment is to be satisfied, or at least not disgruntled, with what life has provided to us. It's sort of a peace of mind, or maybe a better way of putting it would be a mind at peace. You know, it makes a lot of difference in your mental attitude about how you view different circumstances that come to you in life. Depending on your outlook on life, when certain events happen to two different people, one who is generally content with life will handle it differently than a person who is not content with life. The same situation can face them both, and they will deal with it differently. Jesus said something that is a little radical when we look at it today, as far as the way that we look at things, just in general terms of our lives. In Luke, the third chapter, in verse 14, toward the end of that verse, Jesus said to the people there, "And be content with your wages." Anybody here tonight content with how much they're making in their job? Now, I don't think that means that you never should strive to have any more, but have you ever been in a situation where you were just so all of the time upset about not making enough money in your view that just burned at you and burned at you and burned at you? That's virtually all you thought about. You know, if we can't be generally content with what our lot is, what we make at our job or our position at our job, we're going to be unhappy all of the time. And as far as Christians are concerned, unhappy Christians are generally non-productive Christians. There's some of you in the audience that are salespeople. Now, that's not my thing. I'm not much good at that. But my dad's pretty good at it. And one of the things that he's always told us, Carrie and I, as he tried to teach us how to sell things, he said, you have to be convinced about your product yourself before you can sell it. Now, I believe that there are some salesmen who can tell a line of baloney about anything and sell it, but an honest salesman has to be convinced about his own product before he can really sell it. And a lot of people can that are being given the sales pitch can differentiate between a salesman that really believes in his product and one who's just trying to make a sale. A lot of people can tell the difference. You know, as we get out to teach people the gospel of Christ, people are even more aware of whether we're just giving them a sales pitch or whether we really believe what we're telling them. And whether we seem happy in life, whether we seem to be content with what has been given us in this world, sends them a strong signal about our commitment to what we're talking about. If I tell a person about the wonderful things that come to a Christian, and then I all the time seem to be just miserable and unhappy with what life has dished out to me, that seems a little hypocritical to most people. Matter of fact, it sounds a little hypocritical to me. If being a Christian is wonderful, then we need to be happy with the situation that we're in. One of my favorite passages that I read to myself when I get a little down about work or various things that turn out in life is in Philippians, the 4th chapter in verse 11. And the Apostle Paul wrote that, and he wrote it from a Roman prison. He said, "Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatever state I am therewith to be content." Now, he went on and elaborated, and he said that if, you know, I've been in a situation where I've had much, and I've been in situations where I had very little, but Paul said, whatever state I've been in, I have been able, or I have learned, to be content. Now, I wondered about that a lot of times. How could a man, writing from a jailhouse, be content? You think about that a little bit. What is it about life that would enable a man like Paul to be able to say he'd learned to be content, even if he was in a prison, even facing death by execution at some point in the future? Another passage that I find helpful along that line is again written by Paul. He seemed to have the most to say about this, and that's found in 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 through 8. He said, "But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content." And the point that he's getting at there, I believe, is that we have to look for our contentment beyond the things and the circumstances of this world. Quite a few of you here are old enough to have learned this lesson from a practical standpoint. I say you're old enough to have. I don't know whether you have, but you're old enough to have. To have been able to get most of the things that this earth holds out to us, and to have learned that no matter how many of those things you get, that doesn't bring contentment with life. I started out at 20, 21 years old, 21, I guess. I bought me a house. Put half of everything I made in a month into that house. And I thought that house would make me content, but it didn't. And I thought if I got a new car someday, that would make me content. And it did for about a week. But then it's all of a sudden an old car. And there's no contentment in that. And you can get a bigger house, and you think a bigger house will make me content. Well, I got a bigger house, and that didn't make me content. You can go on and on. And Paul is telling us that the things of this world do not make us content. In Hebrews 13 and verse 5, the writer there said, "Let your conversation or your manner of life be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have, for he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee." What you have, be content with. You know, one of the things that really works against us, and I see it in the church, and I've seen it in me, and I've seen it in some of you, is that we're content for a little while we're just looking at what we have. It's really not so bad. We've got what we need. until particularly a close friend of about the same age gets a little bit more. And then ours doesn't seem to be good anymore. And we're not content anymore with that. And we're striving to get more because we think I'll be content if I can catch up or surpass him. Amazingly, this happens most often with our friends, not with some stranger. That stranger that lives on the other side of town and we don't know that has a $500,000 mansion, we don't worry about that. But if the fellow I grew up with and went to school with and is a close friend of mine, all of a sudden he's doing better or she's doing better, we begin to worry about it. And we're not content. And Paul is saying, so long as you let things try to determine whether you're going to be happy or not, you're never going to be contented. Got another lesson that I preached a few weeks ago at a different congregation from the book of Ecclesiastes that tells about Solomon and his efforts to find meaning in life and contentment in life. And he checked off every physical thing a man could desire, and he tried them to the limit with all of his wealth and his power. And he said in each case, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. He couldn't find it in any of those things. We're not to be slothful in our business practices or in our work. Being content doesn't mean that we're to be lazy. Being content doesn't mean that we're never to try to better our situation in this world. Because as Paul said, he lived in different circumstances, better and poorer. But the point that he was making is whatever situation you have in life tonight, be content with that until and if it changes. And then if it changes, find some contentment there. And he kept pointing to the fact that no matter what your situation is in this world, if you are a child of God, you always have the Lord to look to and heaven to look forward to. If everything that I have, if my nice house and my nice van and everything that I have, my clothes, property, everything is taken away from me, can I still be content as a Christian? Maybe I won't be, but I can be. If all of that's taken away and I keep looking to the fact that one of these days I'm going to live in heaven with the Lord for eternity, I can be content with the situation that I have, even if I'm living in a tent on somebody else's property and somebody else is feeding me. I can be content if I have a proper perspective. We're supposed to work, according to Ephesians 4 and verse 28. In fact, we're to labor with our hands so that we can have, and furthermore, that we can help other people have. So it's not an issue of just giving up and being some sort of recluse that lives in a hut and tries to be poor all of the time. That's not the point. But it's to be satisfied with what we do have. Do your best, Paul says in essence, and then leave the rest to the Lord. Don't worry about these things. Well, I was working on this lesson and I thought, well, that sort of outlines the problem in a nutshell and what contentment and lack of contentment is. But if the lesson's going to be practical, we need to look at some of the things that keep us from being content. One of the first things that came to my mind that affects me from that time to time is that compelling or controlling desire to always have more. I think we're all that way. Do you ever notice that? There's something you want so badly, and you work hard for that, and you get it. And as soon as you've had that, and it's about a week old, and now it's a part of your life, a part of your home, what happens next? Your eyes focus on something else that you want. And that's not altogether bad, unless it begins to control your life. Unless the primary focus of your life begins to become wanting and gaining these things. Then we're never happy. Solomon talked about how that when you get all of these things, then your problems actually multiply. He said if you have a huge house, then you have to have servants and you have to feed the servants. And he didn't have to pay any taxes, but today we'd have to pay taxes. And if you've got a boat and two or three cars, you've got maintenance and insurance on all of that, and your problems are just tripled and quadrupled the more things you get. You know, sometimes we look at some poor fellow down in Kentucky living in an old shack, and after we've struggled with all this for a while, his life looks pretty good. I hear us every now and then around here sort of talking like poverty is righteousness. I'm not sure I believe that, but it is a lot simpler, and there's a lot less problems in life when you don't have a lot of things to take care of and pay for and try to keep somebody from stealing. We alluded a little bit before to the problem of becoming discontented because somebody else close to us has something that we don't have. That grates in a church, and it grates in families sometimes when one brother or one sister gets a little bit ahead of the other. Oh, that works, especially in families. That works against us in families, and the church is one big family, and it works against us here sometimes too. Pessimism is another thing that works at making us discontented. I used to be a pessimist. I bragged about it. I used to say, if you're a pessimist, then you're never disappointed with anything. You're looking on the downside of life all the time. And if something happens to go your way, then you're happy. And if it doesn't go your way, that's the way you expected it anyway. But that's a pretty sad way to look at life. And you're pretty discontented with life in general, because you're looking at life as one big disappointment to begin with. And another thing that really gets us discontented, and we all do this from time to time, is feeling sorry for ourselves. You know, when I get good and tired, that's a real good time for me to start feeling sorry for myself. And then nothing. I don't pay any attention to the things that are going my way. All I'm focusing on are my problems. And I can get discontented real quickly that way. I think Christians sometimes get to feeling sorrier for themselves than non-Christians do at times. And I don't, in a way I understand that, and in a way I don't understand it. Now explain that. You know, we as Christians look at some of the passages in the Bible that say that if you live as a Christian, you will suffer persecution. And some of us just view our life as one big ache and pain. I'm a Christian. I know I'm going to have to go through all of this. Oh, I've seen some Christians that were so feeling so sorry for themselves that they miss the whole point, that they are the saved, redeemed children of God, heirs of God, heirs of heaven for eternity. You know, when Paul and some of those fellows back in the first century were put up against a pole and whipped till their backs were bloody, and then thrown into a dirty prison, then they sang songs and said, "We count it all joy to suffer this." Well, we don't look at it that way very often. Somebody calls us a name or just looks on us like we're a little strange, and all of a sudden we're down in the dumps feeling sorry for ourselves because we're suffering so much for the Lord. Well, Paul was a different character. He was writing some of this from a prison, and he said it, that he counted it joy to do that. He didn't get upset about suffering as a Christian. He said that he was even content in that situation. Content. Happy, willing to suffer for the Lord. Why? Why could a man say that he was content under those situations? He had his eyes on something besides just the mundane things of this world. And the last thing that I thought about, and there's probably a lot more, but this is the last one I thought about that really makes us discontented, is when we complain all of the time. Complaining is something that we all do, but it depends on how much you complain. You know, you can start out with one complaint, then you can add on another one and another one and another one till you just don't see anything right about your life. I guess that's sort of falling back to that feeling sorry for yourself, but a lot of times it starts out with complaining about things. If somebody had something to complain about, seems to me like it would have been the Apostle Paul. If the man wanted to complain, I couldn't find much fault in him saying, my circumstances aren't too great here. But that isn't what he did. He put that aside. The road away from discontentment and toward happiness is something that we need to look for. And in trying to figure out just how I ought to change my life so that I'm not discontented, one of the things that seems very practical to me that I picked up from one word in what the Apostle Paul said is that we have to work at it. Paul said, "For I have learned in whatsoever situation I am therewith to be content." He learned it. It wasn't something that all of a sudden just fell in his lap. The day he was baptized and became a Christian, he didn't all of a sudden become the most contented man in the world. He said he had to learn that. And to me, that suggests, like most learning, that we have to work at it. And if we are down in the dumps all of the time and we're not contented with the way that we're living, then we're going to have to work at changing that. One of the ways that I think that we can do that is take time to do something most of us don't do enough of, and that is meditate. And that's just a fancy word for taking a little spare time out to really give some thought to our life as a Christian. Meditate on what you have and what you are. Don't think your situation is so good? Let me take you to a few places in Xenia or Dayton, and I'll show you some other people that are living far differently than you are, and I'll guarantee you when you get back, you'll feel better about your life. This congregation is relatively affluent. I go a lot of places and visit and preach, and people are not nearly as well off as we are, but a lot of them seem more content than we are. If you want to meditate or think about what you have in comparison to someone else, think about those that have so much less than you do. Flip on one of those channels on television and watch those people over in some parts of Ethiopia and Africa that don't even have enough to cover their body, and the flies are swarming around their faces and death is at the door. They don't have enough to eat or to even keep their babies alive. And you'll be a little bit more content with your life. If you're a Christian, meditate on who you are. I don't agree with Jesse Jackson on too many things, but I like his one line that he takes around to the colleges and the universities when he gives his get up and go speeches. He says, "You are somebody." And he's talking primarily to black audiences, and he knows a lot of them have a very low self-esteem of who they are. I suggest to you tonight that too many of us as Christians have a very low self-esteem of who we are. And if you're a Christian tonight, you are somebody. Unlike all of the other people in the world who are not Christians, you are a child of God. And we say that word or those words over and over and over, and yet they sort of glide over our minds without us really evaluating and understanding and appreciating what it means to be a child of God and an heir of God. And all of that entails. If you want to quit being discontented with your life, meditate on that and think about who you are. We recognize what it would mean to be the child of a Kennedy or a Rockefeller or one of the multimillionaire billionaires of this world. We know what that means, and sometimes we dream about that, but that is just poverty compared to what a child of God has. When you die and you go to heaven as a Christian, you inherit more than J. Paul Getty and all of the rich men of this world put together, if multiplied a billion times, could say that they owned. That's who you are. And if you're feeling bad about yourself, you just haven't thought about who you are. Think about your health that you have, your family, the house you have to live in, the food you have to eat. and think about the salvation that you have from your sins that separates you from Satan's hell. And another thing that will take you away from discontent, which is tied directly to what I'm talking about, is sit down and pray to God and thank Him for everything that you can think of that is going your way and that you have. If you have time to get finished, you'll be content. You can't miss. Look around for others who are less fortunate and try to help them. It'll be a blessing to them, and I'll guarantee you it'll be a blessing to you. You'll feel better because you help them, and you'll come home feeling a lot better about your own situation too, because you'll see that you're more fortunate in that particular area than they are. Teach yourself that happiness is not tied to things. Luke 12 and verse 15 says, in part, a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. You know, that's one thing that my job has given me an appreciation of. I get to go at different times into the homes of extremely wealthy and powerful people. And what I see most of the time is unhappiness. You know, these people have all of the things that I can imagine that I might like to have. They have money and they have power and they have prestige. And I've met a few that seem to be happy, but most with all of those things have not been happy people. If you're in the business world, one of the things that people in your business will be constantly pressuring you to do is to climb the ladder of success. Well, I knew a little bit about ladder climbing before I ever got into business. My dad had me doing a lot of that when I was young. One thing I learned is that ladder climbing is hard. It brings a lot of aches and pains. And when we have our sights set only on trying to climb that corporate ladder and get that position that we want, it's backbreaking and emotionally dissatisfying to us. Because it's sort of like we talked about before. The thing about a ladder is that once you get beyond one rung, there's always another rung. And each time you get a little bit higher, the altitude and the oxygen get a little bit thinner, and the problems get greater. You won't find satisfaction in the kind of work you do alone. Being poor isn't the objective that we're talking about, but it's being grateful for whatever we have, and more than that, again, for appreciating who we are as Christians. Every one of us wants to be happy and to enjoy life. I think I might have said in a lesson from this pulpit once before that most all of the sins that are committed in this world are committed by people who are seeking to be happy. If someone commits adultery, it's usually because they think that being with that person will bring them happiness. And the man who steals from someone else thinks that obtaining whatever it is he's stealing is going to make him happy and satisfied with life. And you can go right on down the list of the sins that the Bible enumerates, and most all of them are pointed toward people trying to find happiness and contentment with life. They're just going about it in the wrong way. More money and more things will not make us content. I think maybe we need to view life a little bit like a camper does. You know, when you go out in the woods to camp, John does a lot of that. You ought to see this old trailer he hauls down to West Virginia. Now, a man couldn't be content too long in that trailer. I don't know whether I'd be content one night, but John views it as something very temporary. And that's the way we have to view life. If things aren't quite as we would have them, it's a little bit like the camper. We don't really expect everything in this life to be quite like we think it ought to be. but we're looking forward to getting home. After John's been out there in the woods a week, I have a feeling that as he drives back from West Virginia, he's got in his mind that soft bed at home where he can stretch all the way out and he can be warm all night and have the other amenities of home. That's the way we have to view life if we're going to be content. If we expect to find all of the happiness and all of the wonder and expression that can be found in life here, then we're going to be as disappointed as the fellow who has to be satisfied with a tent here upon the earth. We have to view this life as temporary. The Bible talks about us being sojourners here, people who are viewing this life as a temporary one, and we need to be looking forward to heaven as the place where we will find all of the things and all of the happiness that can come to us. And if we have our mind focused on that, we're going to be much more content while we're here. I would suggest to you this evening that there is only one thing that I know about for which we should be discontented. That is the possibility of missing heaven. If the possibility exists in your life that you might miss heaven, please be discontented. Because there's nothing in this world that you can gain, achieve, no position that you can take, no amount of power that you can have that's going to make you happy for very long. But the thing that will make you happy and contented is to know that no matter what happens here, even if they cut my head off, the next scene for me is eternity in heaven with God and His angels and the other Christians who've lived righteously in this world. I lose it all here. I can, if I will, be content. Wouldn't it be sad if for you or I, we worked for all of the things that money can buy in this world, and the suffering and the death of Jesus for us is in vain? Won't it be sad if we failed to act upon the one thing that can really bring us happiness, not just in this life, but throughout the endless ages to come? Now, I'm getting to that middle age point where I'm about halfway to the end. And you begin to think and evaluate a little bit, what have I done with my life and what lies ahead? And it's a little frightening in some ways to think about maybe I might waste my whole life messing around with something that's unimportant and then spend eternity wishing I'd acted differently. Won't it be sad if I knew that hell and punishment awaited me? I think if I knew that, I would be discontented with that situation. What about you? Are you contented with having to worry about what's going to happen beyond the grave? If you aren't worrying about that, I'm not going to apologize for pestering you about it. Some things that are good for us hurt. And if I keep pestering you and bothering you and trying to stir up a little discontent in your heart tonight, it's only because I want you to change so that you can be content forever and eternity. If you would obey the gospel tonight, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.